And they gave me, before I got married, they gave me a shower, and, you know, all the very nice people. Yeah. Really, I learned a lot at the hospital. I've been always grateful for that opportunity, because it gave me an insight into what went on, not only for the lay people in working in the hospital, the nurses and the student nurses, just what kind of things they had to go through, you know. It gave you a feeling of empathy. They were working too, and they weren't getting very much either. You know, student nurses what did they get? $10 a month or something, and their training.
Right.
In those days, you know. It's a different story now altogether. But for everybody in those days, it was very lean times.
After you worked on the domestic campaign, what work did you then do with the unions?
Well, I stayed with that. As I say, I got interested in I wasn't really concerned with not working steadily at any particular job after I got married, except looking after my home and looking after my husband. He used to go to town on jobs, being a carpenter. And the result was that I spent a number of years just, you know, building up a home life, really, so that I can't really say that I had any tremendous experience of the labor movement in those days, excepting when my husband would be invited to go someplace and get some, bring the wife along. And that's when you met the wives of the other people, the other people in the labor movement, and you gradually got to know people that way. And so that led up to a number of things, you know, that were helpful later.
Right.
And then much, much later, we decided we thought the best thing to do would be to try and take a card out with the hotel and restaurant people, and that's, I became a member. And so I've been with them ever since, because I'm a life member now, and that was how that I worked through them. So that has been my organization. But in the meantime, in those later years, there was an organization built up for the office workers.
Mm.
And Local 15 that we have now, and some of the people that were in local, in the old times of Local 378 of the Hydro, were going back and forth with each other, used to meet. So, and then it became, there were two organizations. There was the Hydro organization, which are office employees, and then there was the local office employees, which took in, you know, all of British Columbia. And I was in there for a while and did quite a lot of work, actually. I never was an organizer, though.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't negotiate. I took one crack at negotiating, and I didn't like it, so I didn't do any more. But we did quite a lot of work in those early years with the office employees, and the office employees owe a lot to those early efforts, to what they're getting now, you know, the kind of conditions they get and the kind of wages they get too.
When you began to be a member of the hotel and restaurant workers, were you working as a waitress? Or?
No. We had our own business. And we wanted to have a union business. So that was one reason that I got involved with them.
And you could do that as an owner of your business?
Yes, you could do that. As, you know, like there are family operations now who, you know, maybe with only two employees or five employees or whatever. And they can't really be organized if they have less than five employees. You have to have five or more. And those family operations are not secure for union organization, because they drift around too much. Ma and Pa cafes, Ma and Pa restaurants, used to call them, you know. Those were family operations, and they were hard to organize, and they still are hard to organize. a lot of these new type restaurants that we have that go in for specialty type dining, a lot of them are family operations.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are very antagonistic towards union organization in the service field. But more and more, as you see, service workers, not only in Canada, but around the world, this is the coming industry, is service workers. Because we may be computerized to the nth degree, you know, but we'll always have to have service if we want to eat, and we want to stay in hotels, and we have to have laundry services and things of that kind, so that the service workers will always be a necessity for a long, long time. I can't see that being automated.
Okay. Were you active with the Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union?
Well, active in the sense that I'm a very strong supporter of the union organization, and anything I could do to boost the organization, well, I would do it, you know.
What kind of things?
Well, I got interested in the union label, because, you see, they had shop cards, union restaurant cards and buttons, and that's how I came to be interested in the union label and shop card and button movement. And then out of that, I had to travel across Canada to the different functions for the union label people and for the union label trades department. There's a union label trades department of the Canadian Labour Congress, but that was already in place by the old Trades and Labour Congress of Canada under a very valued member of the union labour movement by the name of Ed Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one who did the work in British Columbia. He was the one who actually started, kept pushing for a union label trades department at the national level. And he was successful in getting recognition for that in Ottawa with the old Trades and Labour Congress of Canada. So that the union labour movement, nationally speaking, was started with his efforts.
Hmm.
And of course I came in much later. And I came in with my husband in 1954. That's a long way from 42, you know, it's 12 years. And we really got interested in that because we felt that here was this was the organizing tool.
Mm-hmm.
Was the promotion of the union label and the shop card and the button. And that applied to all the organizations. So that's what's in our old files here, is the different organizations who have a shop card, or they have a button, or they have a label. The garment workers have their ladies, international lady garment workers have their label, amalgamated clothing workers for men have their label. And the thing has gone on and on right up to present day.
Can you talk a bit about the philosophy behind the idea of a union label or button or card?
Well, that they had a strong, very strong department in the United States, and there was a very close liaison kept between, before I came into it, the liaison had been very close with the people in Washington, union label. And we continued that on later on when I got involved in it, and my husband. He was secretary first, and then I took it over from him. And the philosophy behind the promotion of the union label shop card and button was, first of all, for trade union people to realize that when they earn a trade union dollar with an agreement with their own employer,
mm-hmm.
then they are almost bound by goodwill to buy the product of their brothers and sisters. And that's the promotion was based on that. That was their basis, that you buy back the union-made products or services of your other fellow trade union men and women.
Right.
And it's that's persisted to this day, you know, that we still have that basic philosophy that if you're earning a good salary at a trade union job, then you have to give some thought to some employees who are, while they're in the trade union, are making less than you are, but are producing a union-made product, then you should buy the product and help to keep the jobs in Canada and support Canadian industries, mm-hmm. not only in Canada, but in the provinces. You know? And so there are union labor councils or leagues, some of them call them leagues, across Canada. And they're in every province. They have committees in the Maritimes, and they're all part of the Union Labor Trades Department of the Canadian Labor Congress. I was executive vice president, regional, on the Union Labor Trades Department for a number of years, and then I resigned a year ago. Last May, in order to give somebody else a chance. I figured I'd been in it long enough and somebody else should go in there as a new vice president. And that was regional, and also a new vice president provincially. Mm. And one of the men in our own hotel restaurant workers, he's the provincial vice president on the Union Labor Trades Department. And the man who runs the Amalgamated Clothing Workers here, Taychuk, Ed Taychuk, he's the regional vice president on the department executive board nationally for the union label. But like everything else, you know, you have to have people who are interested and will go all the way to doing their part in building it up and mm-hmm. keeping at it and seeing that the job gets done, and there's a certain amount of dedication that you give anyway, whether you're... For me, I never made any money out of the labor movement. I can say that with all honesty. I have never taken any large monies at all from the labor movement. I got expenses when I was traveling back and around, attending conventions, putting on displays, and shows and the exhibition, but no salary. Honorarium maybe $100 a month when they had the money. Just when they had the money. But you know, you get into it, and for me it was kind of a dedication thing, and I just kept right on working at it until now we feel that somebody else should take it on and try to do even a better job, you know.
What kind of industries had union labels or bugs or cars? Was it all unions?
Not all unions. The industrial, you see, in the early days there was the craft unions, which were mm-hmm. under the Trades and Labour Congress of Canada. And then the industrial unions organized and became the CIO and the CCL in Canada. And they had their own education programs, and then when there was a merger in 1956, and I have a picture back there of the first meeting of the merger meeting. Then things changed a bit. They had to merge the departments as well, and there was representation in all the departments equally from the old AFFLs and the CCL.
Right.
So then it became CLC. And on that basis then, a lot of new things began to happen. But still in all, the Union Labor Trades Department was just, you know, they didn't get all that much from the Congress either. They were a small department, and they did get an office and the use of a secretary, and usually it fell to the lot of whoever was elected at the conventions to the federations and councils director. He would take on the union label as part of his federations and councils work, because he was in touch with federations and councils across the country, and therefore it seemed logical that if they were going to establish union labor committees, that this is where it would be at, you know. And that's what happened. And of course, you this is a this is how you get a union labor league or council started, and that gives you some of the reasons why we need to pursue it. Woodward's and the Hudson Bay and Eaton's, and Woodward's and Hudson Bay used to be regularly give us window space during Union Buying Week, and Union Buying Week arose out of a need for to point it up to people and say, okay, we have a Union Buying Week which begins on Labor Day, and that arose out of the displays at the exhibition. And we completed 26 years of displaying a union label booth at the PNE this year. And that's our 20-year plaque is on the wall. That's our 20-year citation. And we, that was 72, so now we are 26 years. And it's 22 years for me, connection with the whole business.
How did you spread the word? How did you get unions interested in it?
Well, you went and talked to them. Well, many times I went to a union meeting when I was invited. I never went unless I was invited. And they would invite me to come along and say a little piece about union buying, and sometimes put on a display. And we, those early days, we had more to work with. And by the way, the first union label committee was started with three or four women who were Amalgamated Clothing Workers here in British Columbia in 1939. That was the first union label organization, and it was taken up from there. And Mr. Charles Herrett, who was the president of the Barbers Local here in British Columbia, he was the first president. And Smith, as I mentioned to you, Ed Smith, he was the secretary treasurer. That's how it all began. But it began with those women. It was women who actually started that committee on sewing in a label into the garments and making a union label. And in order to have a union label, organizations would have to sell that to their employer. You know, they'd have to point out to the employer when they go to the agreement, and it's still being done. Mm-hmm. The brewery workers were very successful. And of all the crafts, the brewery workers were probably the most successful in selling the idea of union label to their employer, because it ended up that the cartons, the bottles, the corks, the labels, the packing, the person who did the packing, the person who did the bottling, the beer itself was all union. And it was so indicated on the cartons that this was completely union operation. Yeah.
Did that have a real effect on non-union businesses in some of the areas where there was a competition between unionized businesses and non-union?
Well, this is the crux, you see. If there's enough people in the trade union movement who will say, okay, we're not going to eat in a non-union restaurant, we're not going to stay in a non-union hotel, and they make every effort to see that they do stay in a union hotel and eat a union restaurant. We had more union restaurants in those early days than we have now. Most of the union operations are now inside the hotel, like a union bar or a union cocktail bar. Or down the States, of course, you can get a union card in almost any little bitty tavern down there. They're organized to the hilt down there, but not in Canada. So that you can't go in and say, this restaurant is organized and they haven't got a card to show. Some of the hotels have to be jacked up once in a while to show their card that they are a union hotel. And that's, as I say now, with all the specialty restaurants, which are probably family-owned, they are hard to organize. Mm. And the hotels are hard to organize. The hotels association are are people who are pretty individualistic, you know. But it's a matter of going in and saying, it's like printing, like you have a union label and printing here. This is an Allied Printing Trades label there. And the office workers have their label. This is on a pin here. And this kind of thing comes out of the Congress, and that all the produced from the Canadian Labour Congress that has the Allied label, that the printing is all union. And then there, we have a whole long poster showing all the different labels and insignia of union label shop cards and products and services. And there's a long list.
Right.
And there's a long list in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When you were working for, when you were a member of the Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union initially, did you attend union meetings?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Did you become active on the executive or?
No, I didn't. Those early days was pretty well dominated. Well, it still is. It's dominated by the males. In the hotel. Now, there are some women on the executive now, mm-hmm. in the hotel restaurant wise, but those early days there were, my first acquaintance with them was in the old Labour Temple, and there were two women then who were very, very active in the hotel and restaurant employees. They were activists, you know, mm-hmm. really. And that was the first two women that I met who were strong on unionization of people in the hotel restaurant field. But as the years went on, there was a couple of women business agents, and one of them, maybe you know, Chris Waddell.
Yes.
Well, she was a member of the hotel restaurant. She worked in the aristocratic restaurants, and. She was one, became a business agent. There was another one up country, and one over, it was in Victoria, I'm not sure. There might have been one in Victoria. But not on the whole. The women not on the whole were holding office in the hotel and restaurant. Now, at the international level, down in the United States, they had a number of very capable women who were on the international board. But then the United States has a different approach altogether to, at least they had in those days, they had a different approach to people, men and women, both working, you know, in executive positions, more so than Canada.
Right. Okay. What kinds of things were you involved in doing inside the union? Were you a shop steward or?
No, I just was mostly interested in pushing the shop card and the button.
Right.
And so all my work in the trade union movement has been in promoting the buying and the showing of union made products and services.
Right.
And putting that to people who are in unions and getting a message to them all the time that you are obligated to spend your union earned dollar on a union product or union service. And we have in our old files, we have a record that was put on by Ed Smith. He made a record. And we have International Lady Garment Workers, as well as the Amalgamated Clothing Workers. But the International Lady Garment was at one time spent $2 million promoting their union label. And we have, there's one film in there of a whole fashion show in color, and they that was what cost the money, was putting these films together of fashion shows in different cities. We had them here in Vancouver, the International Lady Garment Workers, under Mr. Gogan. They put on a big fashion show down in Kitsilano one year they were out here. So that's, you know, my whole effort has been in that field.
Right.
No, I wasn't. You wouldn't have time to take on a job as an organizer. I was asked to become a business agent in the hotel and restaurant, but I said no.
How did you become a member of OTEU?
Well, it was one of those things, being a secretary, treasurer, they said, well, you're doing office work, you know. And the hotel and restaurant people didn't cover office work, although they do now. But in those early days, they didn't. They were mostly restaurant hotel employees. And the office work was done by people who did office work. And so then the union label movement was set up. They said, okay, you are an office worker now.
For the union label?
Yes. Oh, so then, of course, that led into being a member of the office employees.
Were you active in that union in terms of any kinds of positions in it at all?
Not really. I think I was, I can remember, I was on something that led up to organization for a time. Bernie Guthrow was one of the, and Muriel Phelan, who is in the Vancouver District Labour Council office. Her and Bernadette Guthrow, who worked as secretary to Mr. Gervin, they were pretty well prime movers in the office and office workers and employees, office employees union, you know, getting it together.
Mm-hmm.
There were other people besides those two, but they were very interested. And I was interested too because I liked both of these girls and so I said, oh, anything I can do in the office workers, you know, sure, I'll do it. So it was a sort of a general thing. I'd attend all the meetings and that sort of thing, you know, and sat on committees, mostly committee work. My father was a committee man, too, in the old country. He used to sit on numerous committees. So it seemed like I was following in his footsteps, you know. But I've done a lot of committee work in my sojourn with the labor movement.
Who did the OTU try to organize at that time?
We had pretty close associations with the Teamsters in those early days, before the Congress and the Teamsters fell out. And so the Teamsters were very strong supporters of the union labor movement. Actually, and I was very, very sorry to see them take the road that they did, you know. And it was through them then that we used to, we'd meet on various things, various committees, and mostly it was on change of officers. It was hard to keep a business agent going in those days in the office employees because of the wages and so forth, and you wanted to pay the union scale and so forth, and it was hard to keep the thing going. The international helped quite a bit, international mm-hmm. office employees, or OTU. And the later years they supported the business agent, office manager, you know,
right.
But the Local 15 got a lot of help from the international. And they got into, Sarah, that I can remember when the Chambers of Commerce had a secret meeting, and we got wind of this meeting, and we found out what they had done about forming a plan to put labor in its place. And the plan at that time was that they would set forward a pamphlet, of which we got, and somebody got the hold of it, I didn't. Somebody got the hold of it. And it laid out a plan to so work with the trade union movement that they would be continually on the defensive. And that when they were on the defensive, they'd be spending money with lawyers
mm-hmm.
in courts. And out of that arose the injunctions and the court battles, which was very serious for a lot of small organizations.